This is The Gay Life on KSAN. Good morning. I'm Randy Alfred. And this week and next week on The Gay Life, we're continuing our coverage of the Board of Supervisors hearings on violence against lesbians and gay men. The hearings were held in the Board of Supervisors chambers on October 9th. We previously gave you a full hour of coverage of this material, and we're going on this week and next week to complete our coverage of what is a very important problem in San Francisco, in which virtually every gay leader who I have interviewed in the past year has spoken about as a major point of concern. The second half of this morning's program will consist of the testimony of the victims of anti-gay violence. But the first half of the program will be some of the statements made by community leaders whom we could not bring you last month because they were candidates for public office and we were covered by the equal time doctrine of the FCC. So the first person you'll hear this morning is Supervisor Harry Britt, who is the supervisor who called the hearings in the first place.
May I say that though I initiated the call for these hearings, that they were called by the unanimous action of all of the members of the Board of Supervisors, and I hope that everyone in this room understands that the leadership of this city is concerned, and that we hope, all of us, that these hearings will be a positive step towards some real action in dealing with a difficult problem. Everybody in San Francisco is having problems with violence. Gay people, like everyone else, who are old, are unsafe because of the violence against senior citizens. Gay people, like everyone else, know what it means to be attacked and have your personal belongings stolen from you. And gay people, like everyone else, want more police in our neighborhoods. We want swifter and more effective administration of justice where acts of violence are concerned. We want the prosecution of violent crime to be the number one priority of our legal system. The reason that we are here is because there is a special kind of violence that is more offensive than any other kind of violence. And that is whenever violence is inflicted upon any special group of people out of ignorance, bigotry, out of prejudice. All of us know that Jewish people have known what it means that people feel that somehow, because a person is a Jewish, they can be treated as less than first-class citizens. People who are of other races than Caucasian know what it means in the history of our country that people have had crimes perpetuated against them, crimes like lynching, because it was felt that somehow these people are different and not as good as other people. What we are here today to talk about is homophobic violence, which is violence perpetuated against a group of people which are still considered by the ignorant, bigoted, prejudiced people among us to be less than other people because we are different from other people. It is this kind of violence that comes out of homophobia, violence that comes out of ignorance, violence that comes out of prejudice, that the gay community, the lesbian community, want to bring to the attention of the decent citizens of San Francisco who, throughout all of the history that I've been involved with in San Francisco, find any kind of prejudice, any kind of mistreatment of any human being because they're part of a class to be totally unacceptable and totally offensive. And we claim for our community the same right to walk the streets as individual human beings with the same right to safety and respect as anyone else. Unfortunately, it seems to have become a sport on the streets of San Francisco to engage in fag baiting. It has become common practice for lesbians and gay men to walk the streets of the city in fear every time they see a group of youths at a street corner, in fear every time they see a car driving by at a slow rate of speed. We are called faggots regularly. We have people coming down every night to the Castro area and other areas where gay people are known to congregate for no other purpose than to engage in actions which treat gay people as people that you can treat as less than human beings with impunity. This kind of behavior causes great concern not only to those of us who are gay, but to everyone in San Francisco who believes in basic human respect for other people. The reason that we are having these hearings is so that our community will have a chance to say to the people of San Francisco, who overwhelmingly have offered us such opportunities to participate equally in the life of this great city, we need your help. We need every department of this city government to demonstrate a commitment to being a part of eradicating forever homophobic violence from this city. We need every human being who's in a position to influence youth, who's in a position to influence the moral climate of San Francisco, to say it is not all right to beat up people because they are gay, that it is not all right to treat any person differently because they're a part of any minority group whatsoever, whether it's racial, whether it's religious, or whether it's a matter of sexual orientation. We have had a great deal of problems in San Francisco with rape, which is a crime of violence against women, growing out of a sense that because of sexism, to engage in an act of violence against a woman somehow is sexual and not just an act of violence. So women particularly are concerned when violence is committed against a class of people. Today we have to speak to this committee a number of leaders of the gay community who are engaged many, many hours a week in trying to deal with the problem of homophobia, and who have been instrumental in developing for our community a real full participation in the political processes of this city. We have submitted to the chairperson a short list of people who have come forth to help. Following that, we have a list of people who have been victims of violence and want a chance to express to this committee their feelings and their concerns. We have representatives here of the major departments of the city and county of San Francisco and of the Board of Education who are here to listen, and then hopefully at some point in the near future to come back with specific administrative responses to indicate what they are doing to address the problem of homophobic violence in San Francisco. I have only one more word, and I wish I could communicate it with the fullness with which I feel it. In the world in which I live every day, we talk to a lot of people about this problem. I want the lesbian and gay community to know that everyone we talk to is concerned. The leaders of organized labor, the leaders of the religious community in this town, the political people in this town are appalled at the thought that human beings are living in the kind of fear that the lesbian and gay community is living in. And I want to say to all of them that our community is willing to do more than our share, because we are a nonviolent community, to try to deal with the special problems that all people in this city are having with violence. And if anything comes out of these hearings that will point the way for us to do that, we are certainly prepared. Patrick Ferruccio is a young man from my office who, for the last number of months, has worked extremely hard on this problem and deserves a great deal of credit for the pulling together of the information and for helping people individually who are hurt. Unfortunately, Patrick is very shy and is hiding out in my office, so he won't have to make a speech today. The Community United Against Violence is a community organization which for the last couple of years has done remarkable work in the lesbian and gay community in developing techniques for self-protection and community education around problems of violence. The things they have done are useful to the larger city because they have shown what a community of people can do to develop our own resources in dealing with our own problems. I hope that every person who speaks, because so many people wanted to speak, and believe me, there are hundreds of others who, because of work commitments, could not be here today that wanted to speak. I hope everyone will try to keep our presentations down to about a minute in order that the maximum number of people that may be heard. So thank you, Supervisor Hutch, and your committee, for giving us a chance to bring to the attention of the people of San Francisco a problem that simply cannot wait any longer for strong and powerful steps toward its solution.
Thank you.
This is The Gay Life on KSAN. We're presenting excerpts from the supervisors' hearings on anti-gay violence, which were held last month in San Francisco. And what you just heard was the opening remarks, which were made by Supervisor Harry Britt. Next, you'll hear comments made by Tom Ammiano, Carol Ruth Silver, and Bill Maher. Ammiano and Maher were candidates for the Board of Education. Maher was successful, and Ammiano was not. And Supervisor Silver was a successful candidate for re-election to the Board of Supervisors.
I'm not going to kid anybody. I feel very moved and tremendously emotional about this issue. The schools are a heavy place. The schools work with kids. There's nothing as appalling as looking at the beautiful face of an 8-year-old boy when he says faggot and spits it out on the school playground. Graffiti abounds. Sissy, dyke, and faggot are words that every kid knows from the first grade through the 12th grade. It is not the duty of this society to nurture those attitudes. We've been in the schools. We address the kids themselves. There is some movement, but the inertia is overwhelming. I often think that our little program, as fledgling and as struggling as it is very, very powerful because it results in death threats to me. It results in bombings of the women's building, and it results in a personality like Dan White's. One of the kids responded to a question of ours about, why do you want to beat us up? Why do you go to Dolores Park and why do you beat us up? And he said, because it makes me feel good. Well, that's an awfully heavy indictment of the schools, that there's nothing else offered in the schools to make that kid feel good. So we have a lot of endemic problems to deal with here. Seventy percent of the schools are third world. When we try to bring our small speakers bureau into the schools, we bring black and brown and Asian men and women, so there'll be a further bonding. This is important to us because this violence does not exist in a vacuum. Parents or non-parents, gay or straight, children are everyone's future. Anatomy is not destiny. Anger is our friend. The schools need and must change, and with the muscle of the community, they will. I urge you to continue this struggle of support. Thank you.
Supervisor Silver.
Madam Chair, I do not have an item on the calendar other than this hearing, and as one of the co-sponsors, along with all of the members of the board of this hearing, I am very moved by the testimony that has been produced so far. I think that it is a great and a grave thing that is being examined here. I do want, though, before I have to leave to take care of other committee business, I would like to just say that the statistics generated by Community United Against Violence, I think, give us both heart and grave cause for concern. I think it is a grave cause for concern that violence is happening. It is, I think, something that we have to look at when it is the Latino community that is constantly accused of the major portion of this violence, and when the statistics show that only about 30% of that community is in fact involved. I think it's important that, like some other myths, that myth be set to rest by these hearings. I think it's also important to set to rest the myth that the police chief and the mayor of this town are not concerned. The police chief is here. The mayor is concerned. The mayor has been concerned since the beginning. And if either the mayor or the police chief had a quick answer to this problem,
Supervisor, will you please allow the supervisor to speak? Please do not be discourteous toward her. I don't think she exemplified that kind of behavior towards any speaker. Thank you.
And if any of us, myself, Supervisor Britt, yourselves, the police chief, had a quick and easy solution to this problem, you can be damn sure it would have been implemented already. There are no quick and easy solutions, and we are here to try to reason together about what can be done, what things can we do as a community united against violence, the community of gay people, the community of public officials, the community of all people in San Francisco. And I stand, though I don't think I have to say it, ready to do anything that can be done by me, and I think every other member of this board stands that way, to see that this violence is stopped. We are a community united. Thank you.
The next speaker is Mr. Bill Maher, President of the Board of Education.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, brothers and sisters who are here today. I think if we're going to deal with the problem of violence against gay and lesbians or any other problem, we have to define the problem. And I think that the problem here is different than a lot of other crime in our city. The problem here is not economic in nature. It's night riding, plain and simple. It's attacking people for what they are. It's attacking people. It's a political attack. And I think we should say that. I think we should define it, because otherwise we will not resolve it. I'm very upset with the statistics today. I'm also pleased with them in the sense that the amount of crime that is being allocated to our children in the schools is diminishing. It means that we're having some effect. Unfortunately, the rise from other sources brings very little comfort. I'd like to just talk very briefly about what we're trying to do and encourage the community and this committee to tell us what else we should be doing and to work with us. We have established an attendance program at Mission High School and are extending it to the other high schools, where we phone parents the next morning to say your child was not in school, in an attempt to keep children in school learning instead of on the streets and in trouble. We have set up a gay speakers bureau to talk to our students that violence is not appropriate, to make it clear to them that it is not accepted by the staff, by the board, or by the community. We have set up an advisory committee on family life, and we have passed a resolution to expel any student who is caught on the school premises with a deadly weapon. We're working on other solutions, other possibilities. We need help from this community, from this committee, if we're going to make them work. We will continue to work on it. But I think that it is very important that we understand that the attacks on gays and lesbians is different in kind than the economic crime that is also common in our city. It is an attack by reason of people's sexual orientation, and it is a political attack. And we didn't stand for it in the South, and we won't stand against blacks, and we won't stand for it in the North against gays. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
This is The Gay Life on KSAN in San Francisco. You're listening to excerpts from the San Francisco Board of Supervisors hearings on violence against lesbians and gay men. You just heard Tom Amiano, a candidate for school board, and Bill Maher, president of the school board, and Supervisor Carol Ruth Silver. The next speaker you'll hear is Kevin Wadsworth, who was an unsuccessful candidate for the Board of Supervisors. And following Wadsworth, you'll begin to hear the testimony of some of the victims of anti-gay violence identified as Roberto Serrano, John Doe No. 1, Louise Brodsky, and John Cantor.
The next speaker is Mr. Kevin Wadsworth, Concerned Republicans for Individual Rights.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. It was not less than a year ago that my own lover was attacked on the streets near Castro Street. And it becomes very emotional when you start seeing people that are close to you, such as my lover, my best friend, who nearly 2 weeks ago was shot in the side of the head and lost his eye. He's very lucky to be alive. What concerns me, though, is not necessarily just the violence directed against gay people particularly. It's violence within society itself. Many of us read this morning or listened on the radio about a man who was crushed by, wasn't Muni, thank God, but a trans train in New York. And he was trying to climb up onto the platform, and everybody ignored him, and he got crushed. And I believe that entire audience, that entire crowd who was watching that man get crushed, was guilty of murder. And I believe if San Francisco does not start paying attention to what is happening in its streets, paying attention to San Franciscans, seniors, paying attention to gays, paying attention to women, then we all become guilty of whatever that violence is. A week ago, my brother-in-law was attacked in his apartment house, and he called out for help, and his neighbors ignored him. And I think that is part of the problem here. I think part of the problem is that neighbors do not know each other anymore, that we have become insular, that we have become so individualistic and me-tooism that we refuse to acknowledge the fact that we live within, in a community. Even if we live in an apartment house, we don't know who lives next door or who is below us or who is above us. And it bothers me, and I think, I don't know what you are going to do in particular, but I know that I, as an individual citizen, I'm going to take it upon myself to get to know my neighbors better. In that way, perhaps I can help you do your job. Thank you.
Norberto Serrano.
Thank you for letting me talk. My story is that during the Memorial Day weekend, a group of three friends and me went up to the Russian River. And what we did was simply go up there to spend the day, rented a canoe, and we're having a great time. I go up there often. And a group of about 50 to 80 men on the beach all of a sudden started yelling, "Look, they're faggots." And before we knew it, rocks about this big were being thrown at us, and we barely got away. And something that the representative from Operation Concern pointed out is very real for me, and that is the, you know, the psychological effect afterwards. For days and days, I would just walk around, and tears would come to my eyes. It was a very moving thing and very frightening. I've lived in San Francisco now for 5 years, and I do not own a car. I do not go out at night because I don't feel safe taking the muni buses. And I won't, you know, it's just real sad. And I don't want to see this happen anymore. The police up there responded by clearing the beach. And I reported the incident to Harry Britt's office and to the police department up there. And I don't know what happened after that. But I don't feel safe walking the streets in the city. And I feel it more and more every single day. All I have to do is walk down the street, and I feel conspicuous just by the fact that I'm gay and there is this increase in violence. And I hope that some results will come out of this and that I will feel safe in walking the streets. Thank you.
Now, I have a name here, John Doe number one.
Excuse me, I use that name, but for personal
reasons. That's fine,
reasons.
That's all right.
I didn't want to
whatever name you want to
else.
Use.
A week ago, Tuesday night, it was very warm in the city, and I had three friends from Europe visiting and decided to take them to the top of Twin Peaks, to the scenic area, to look at the view of the city. When we arrived up there, the area was quite packed with people, so I had to park out near the road. The four of us walked on the road going, there's a circular road that goes around to the front to the main viewing area. I should point out that our dress and mannerisms were not overtly gay in any way. We were all wearing very much street-type clothing. One gentleman did have a Levi jacket and Levi's on. The rest of them were all wearing clothes like I'm wearing now. We passed one car, I would guess about five men, who had been drinking excessively, all young Caucasians. And as we walked by, there were some comments, faggot, queers, things of this type. Because they were now between us and our automobile, I said to them, ignore them, keep going to the front. My idea was to circle around and come back around to the car to avoid any problems. As we got up the front, the four of us had were kind of separated a little bit, and all of a sudden turned around and we were being charged from the rear. I yelled, get back to the car. We all started running back to the car. I don't know what happened to my friends. I later found out that two of them escaped by going directly over the bank down the cliff. The other one went over the bank the other direction. I was the one that ran around the road to the car. They caught me before I got to the car and knocked me to the pavement, kicked me and beat me rather viciously. I would have been much more severely injured had I not taken defensive measures like curling up in a fetal position and putting the hands and face, hands and arms over my face. One of the kicks caught me in the eye. I've had a lot of treatments this week to get rid of this black eye. But it was a kick, and you can see the face of my watch, which took the brunt of the kick, is destroyed the face of the watch. My clothes were torn. I had multiple bruises and abrasions all over my body from being kicked and beaten by these five individuals. Of course, in the hassle, I lost my keys. I couldn't find my car keys. I didn't know where my friends were. It was just an anguishing mental. The physical pain is nothing. The mental trauma of a life-threatening situation, having three guests from out of town that don't speak English very well, that are having problems trying to You know, I didn't know where they were, what was going on, what was happening. I had to go back up the road and try to find these people. I got back near the car where these people were. They saw me and chased me back. I did get their license number of the automobile that they were in. The license number was LEN-131. I'll never forget it. Someone, of course, it was a massive amount of people. No one helped. Some people came up afterwards and sympathized with me. And it was a taxi cab that came up. I asked them, I asked several people, would you please get the police? I found out afterwards that my friends had gone down the hill and had knocked on doors, trying to get one person by himself, not knowing what happened to the other three of us. Two people together, not knowing what happened to the two of us. We were all scattered, trying to get help and trying to get the police. When the police arrived, I had to ask them three times to write down the license number. They refused to take it three times before they finally pulled out a piece of paper and very reluctantly wrote down the license number of the car. The assailants by this time had left. They only wanted me to do one thing, to get out of there and go home. For the flashlight, we finally found my car keys. They said my friends were back at my apartment on Burnett. I found out later that two of my friends had gotten to somebody else's address on the far other end of Burnett Avenue. I later was finding my friends. I found that I was the most seriously injured. The other ones had bloodied lips, bruises, clothes torn, this type of thing. But none of us, luckily, sustained any permanent serious damage or injuries in the accident. I went down to the police station the following day to try to get a report on this thing, and was told that at that time, it was a Tuesday, it was a Thursday, a week ago today, I went to the police department, that my three friends from Europe, by the way, had to go back to Europe the following day. But therefore, my witnesses were gone. I had no witnesses, and it would be their story against mine. And the license number that I had gotten was not a valid license number. They didn't show anything on records as being a number. But I should make out this report. So I continued to persist to make out a report, full documentation of the instances, after which I was then told that, yes, it was a valid number. The people had been contacted. They denied it and had been let go, and no action would be taken by the San Francisco Police Department. What is appalling to me of this thing is that police should be trying to act as a detriment to this type of activity. The conduct of the police in this matter is a de facto condoning of what they're doing and encouraging it. The assailants... The assailants in this matter are now known to the police. The assailants know that the police know them. The assailants know that I got their license number. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if the police gave them my name and address so they could come back and further harass me. And the assailants also know that they have been allowed to go scot-free when someone, actually on a vicious and violent attack on four individuals, that they have been known and yet are allowed to go free by the police with no further action being taken. This can only serve to encourage this type of violence in the city. Thank you.
The next speaker is Louise Brodsky.
I wanted to talk for a few minutes today about another kind of violence that's on the rise, not only in San Francisco and around the country, and that's police violence, terror, and brutality against third world people in this society. And the reason I came to this hearing and why I'm here today is because I feel like we have to oppose violence against lesbians and gay people, but for us to come down here and demand increased police protection is for us actually to be supporting be part of a mobilization, a bringing of police terror against third world communities. So I want to just talk for a minute, what do I mean police terror? Because I know a lot of people think it's just rhetoric. I think we should talk a little bit about what's happening in San Francisco right now. Like less than 6 months ago, there was a black man shot to death by the police on Haight Street. Was that just a fluke? No, it was actually the inevitable byproduct of the kind of daily harassment, the sweeps, the stopping of black people that goes on in the Haight Fillmore all the time. There was a Chicano youth, Barlo Benavides, was killed by the police in Oakland. He was spread-eagled over a car, and the policeman had a shotgun to his head. Was that a fluke? Every weekend, every Friday and Saturday night, 40 to 50 Chicano, Latino youth are busted at the corner or on Mission Street. The reality is that it's only a matter of time, actually, until this kind of daily harassment that's going on against Latino youth in this city leads to another police murder leads to what happened to Barlo Benavides. Was it a fluke when Papa Charles, an elderly black man, was killed in his apartment in Hunters Point when the police broke down the door and came into his apartment theoretically looking for a robbery suspect? People here are screaming, the police never come. When do the police come? They come into the projects. They came into the projects in Orlando, Florida. That's why black people there rose up in opposition. That's what the riot was about. Like, black people around the country are resisting this kind of violence. There was Miami. There was Philadelphia. There's been Flint, Michigan. In the last 6 months, black people are fighting the reality. So what does this have to do with us? You know, we're sitting here. When we demand more police protection, we are condoning and encouraging a police invasion of third world communities in San Francisco. That's not a solution to our problems. Gay liberation can't come by encouraging violence against third world people, and that's what we're doing. And so, like, we have to build a movement of liberation that's not based on seeing the police and city government as our allies against third world people. Thank you.
The next speaker is John Campbell.
I wanted to talk about also a few incidents of violence that I've seen. I lived in the Mission for a couple years, and it's true what the woman just said. Every Friday and Saturday night, outside my window, I saw police dragging lowriders out of cars, stopping like groups of Latino kids, and beating the shit out of them. And that is violence. Another form of violence is when the Alamo Square Neighborhood Association says that black kids can't play in Alamo Square, which has always been a black neighborhood, because they bother the white people's dogs. Or when they say there shouldn't be any low-cost housing in that neighborhood. And I'll tell you, those are poor neighborhoods. They're neighborhoods of black people. The same thing is happening in the Mission, and it's called gentrification, where wealthier white people are moving in and they're driving out poor people. And the police are helping to do that. The police are like the armed wing of that. They're armies of occupations in third world neighborhoods. And I think, you know, we talk about gay liberation, almost no one's mentioned it here today, but nobody's liberation gets built with the police, because they're a fascist and repressive agency, and that's all they are. And people need to consider themselves with liberation. We need to think about liberation of black people and of third world people, and not try to build our liberation on their backs when it actually means killing them and repressing them. Thank you.
This is The Gay Life on KSAN, bringing you coverage of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors hearings on anti-gay violence. You've just heard John Doe No. 1, Louise Brodsky, and John Campbell. The next speakers are Tony Gillis, Paul Hardman, and Brenda Carter.
I just want to speak briefly. I have not actually been physically assaulted. I attribute that to maybe the fact that I'm 6'2 and weigh 200 pounds. I've taken MACE courses, self-defense, and I carry a whistle. I live and work in the Castro, and in the last 3 to 4 months, I myself and my boyfriend have been assaulted 8 different times by having a various variety of objects, such as eggs, rocks, half-full beer bottles thrown at us. This goes from like 18th and Castro to my in front of my house. I do not feel safe on the streets of the city. And the thing that's really disturbing me more than anything else is that 2 of these incidents were instigated by children who were about 7 years old. That includes the rock throwing. Some of them were Latino, but the one most recently was a white Caucasian. I'm afraid to walk out my front door. When I came to the city 5 years ago, I went just about anywhere and didn't worry about it. Even with all my MACE and everything, it's no longer a question of if I'm going to get physically maimed or killed. It's a question of when. I thank you for listening and hope something comes out of this.
The next speaker is Paul Hardman.
My name is Paul Hardman. I'm coming to speak not so much as a victim myself, but the fact that as the publisher of a newspaper, The Voice, I get hundreds of reports from people who are abused and beaten in the streets and the fear they have of going to the police. One incident which was particularly disturbing to me was, now that the city has turned the beach over to the federal government, about a week or so ago, a young 20-year-old black and a 20-year-old white fellow being together were attacked by a band of hoodlums. The black boy did not get away, and all I know that he was unconscious and badly beaten up when they took him to the hospital. And that's in federal jurisdiction. And I think the city has to be responsible to see that the citizens who go out there also are protected locally. What I want to say most particularly, though, is there are two areas that are problems. Some years ago, the Board of Supervisors had a choice of whether we're going to have a police community review board by the citizens or not. Hearings were held all over the city. I went to every single one of them, whether you were in the Chicano community, out in the Richmond, out in the Sunset, or locally. Every one of those community groups that met wanted a citizens review board for the police. Then Chief Gain supported that. It came to the Board of Supervisors and you turned it down. The biggest complaints that most of the poor citizens have with the police is that they don't feel they have protection. And when the citizens spoke out and said, we want this, for whatever reason, the groups who were then supervisors turned it down. Reconsider it. It's within your purview. It should be tried. Everything else you're saying doesn't work. Why not try a heavy hand of the citizen to see that the police officers do not foster violence? For many years, I was the head of a local gay organization that dealt with street kids. I would watch them come in with their wrists bleeding, bloodied, arrested, beaten. We'd get them out of juvenile hall for some non-existent offense except being a youth. These kids are taught to be violent by these officers who are supposed to be protecting the streets. In one instance, when I rose up and got these kids to fill out complaints by the score to deliver down to the police department for review because these kids were afraid to go down there, I was threatened over the phone by a police officer, and I called up the chief at that time and told him exactly who it was. You don't prove those things. I don't tape my phone calls. But it's that kind of intimidation. I don't intimidate that easily. If these kids who have nothing to go on are being subjected to this, street kids learn street violence from the police in too many instances. And I say the city stands indicted if you don't change the process by which police officers who are violent are not rebuffed by their own colleagues. There's a kind of a jockstrap locker room syndrome that you're big and butch and you're macho if you beat up people in the streets because you've got a gun or something else to beat them with. I think those kind of officers should be weeded out of the service. I'm going to make one brief comment, which I think everyone's been ignoring. The fundamental root cause of this problem is excessive fundamentalism. The Catholic Church stands indicted in this town for the behavior of kids who come out of those schools. The Protestants who teach fundamental hate from Leviticus. I have a deadly fear that someone like Ronald Reagan with his fundamentalist followers may get elected, and you're going to get the Laxalts of Nevada and the pigs that come out of the Murchisons, whether it's Roy Rogers or whether it's our own homegrown H.L. Richardson from the southern part of the state. These are hate mongers. They hate us. They hate us with the violence, whether you're black, whether you're gay, or whether you're different from the mold that they want to fit us in. And I think this city almost has to build a wall around itself to protect itself if this onslaught comes upon us. They've got $1 billion to spend in Texas, they're telling us proudly in the Time magazine. Let's look at that, let's look at the symptoms, and relate those symptoms to the violence being directed to those of us who live in the city who happen to be gay.
The next speaker is Brenda Carter.
I guess I could consider myself a victim. I'm a woman who was raped at knife point by two men. But that really isn't what's concerning me here today. What's concerning me is the way that people tend to focus on calls for police as the solution to violence in this society, and with the tendency to see that violence occurring in a vacuum. Recently, I've attended neighborhood association meetings in the Haight Fillmore, where I was actually pretty shocked to see white gay men turning a deaf ear and shouting down the residents, black residents of that community, who were expressing the need for an end to drugs, unemployment, education, social services, and saying that the only thing that they cared about was police protection for themselves. I feel like it's important to understand that the gay community isn't really the only community that's under siege in San Francisco or in this country. that gentrification is pushing out black and Latino communities out of the inner cities all across our nation, and that that's creating a whole other set of anger and rage and struggle. I've also seen a lot of people living in fear in this city. In the Mission and in black communities, I see people in fear of the police and directing anger at them after random harassments, after police sweeps of Latino youth, after violence by the police, and all across the country, I think we've seen communities exploding in an effort, I think, of fighting for survival against the violence brought to the communities by the police. And I don't think that calling for police is going to be a solution to the violence, I think it's, or a protection for us. I think it's going to be an increasing of it. I think that the function of the police isn't so much to protect us, but to control third world communities. And actually, if you look at it, the police haven't been that concerned about rape or violence against gay people until they can use that as a way to mobilize us into controlling and repressing third world communities. So basically, what I think is that the solution to violence isn't going to happen without a struggle for human rights and for black people and Latino people, and not just for ourselves.
This is The Gay Life on KSAN San Francisco, and you're listening to the Board of Supervisors of San Francisco's hearings on anti-gay violence. Hearings were conducted by the chair of the Fire Safety and Police Committee, Supervisor Ella Hill Hutch, and she's the one who's been announcing the names of the speakers before they speak, and we'll just let her continue to give those names instead of repeating them ourselves.
The next speaker is Ray Fidler.
Madam Chairman, Mr. Britt, members of the Board of Supervisors, Police Chief Murphy, and other people. There are two things I basically want to talk about. One, I want to talk about the police myself. I lived in the city, as I said, Tuesday for 5.5 years, and I've called the police department for numerous reasons for harassment by people in my neighborhood in the past, and for also being harassed by the police themselves. That's still going on by two officers, which I've brought over to internal affairs and nothing's being done about it. And I'll take that matter later. I was beat up August of last year before I left the city for a while. And I reported it to Northern Station by Polk. To be exact, I walked there, my side was badly bruised, and I talked to this sergeant at the desk, and I go, listen, I just got beat up. And he goes, by who? And I said, two young kids. Says, what do they look like? Says, well, I tell him what they look like. He says, well, you don't have to write a report and then come back tomorrow morning. I said, I'm giving it to you now. And he says, listen, I'm too busy right now. And all he was doing is just talking to his, excuse me, I want to say a few words, but I won't use mixed language, with your other officers doing nothing except BSing each other. And right now, nothing's being done with that report either, and it's been turned in a year ago. So what I want to say is, I don't feel the police department of this city, since Murphy, you've taken over, has done anything. Gain has been powerful. Gain has done a lot for this community, and if anything, I wish he can come back. Thank you.
The next speaker is Henry Bortman.
I'd like to agree with those speakers who have addressed their comments to the brutality and the violence of the police against black and Latino residents of this city, because I feel like that's actually the most pressing issue of violence in this city. It's not that the attacks against gay people aren't escalating and real, they are, but we have to understand that there are broader problems and there are broader realities, and that while we may not like the police or may not think they're cooperating with us enough in protecting us, black and Latin people in this town and throughout this country hate the police. They are their enemy. They fight them all the time, and they are brutalized and terrorized by them all the time. And they grow up knowing that the police are never going to be their friends. They're an enemy. And I think that if gay people in this city want to see changes come about, want to see perhaps some better communication between communities, calling police into the Mission and calling police into the Hate Fillmore is not going to solve any problems. It's going to create more problems. It's going to mean more brutality and more attacks, primarily on third world people. And I don't think that gay people in this city should be any part of that.
The next speaker is Donna Coleman.
I'm a labor socialist and running for the Board of Supes. And I want to say something. I have been the victim of cop violence, and I saw what happened after the Dan White verdict came in with cops beating people's heads. And I've listened to the testimony today, and I want to say, unlike Harry Britt, I say no more cops in this city. We don't need them. No more guns for the cops. They are thugs and they're scab herders. That's what they do. And they're not going to be pro-gay. And I think you're kidding yourself if you think so. Now, I want to say something about the tension in San Francisco. There is a lot of tension. And one of the reasons comes from the fact that there is a desperate struggle for affordable housing in this city. And rather than the Latino and the gay population fighting it out with each other, what we need to do is expropriate major industry and the real estate speculators who have, through their rent gouging and speculation, have made this city unaffordable for working class people. Now, I want to say something about one thing which no one has brought up here today, and that is Jerry Brown recently vetoed a bill making handguns easier to get. Now, I want to say I am in favor of the right to bear arms. There was a reason why it was put in the Constitution. And I am in favor of self-defense for everyone, black, Latino, gay, and straight, against violent attack. And let me tell you something. Those karate and those whistles, they are not going to work against people coming after you with lead pipes and chains. Doesn't work. I believe people should have the right to bear arms in this country. Finally, I want to say there is a right-wing trend in this country, and it's coming down from the top, from Carter and Reagan, and the fanatic version of it are the Klan and the Anita Bryant fundamentalists. And on this count, I want to say I accuse the present Board of Supervisors, too, because they stood by making sort of futile motions when the Nazis wanted to march into San Francisco and celebrate Hitler's birthday and the kind of genocide that they are planning to perpetuate against gays, blacks, trade unionists, and everyone else. And as a supporter of the Spartacist League, I am proud to say I helped organize the demonstration to stop those Nazis. And I want to say it's no wonder the present Board of Supervisors can't stop attacks on gays. And it's no wonder they can't stop the Nazis, because even the most liberal ones, like Britt and Carol Ruth Silver, are coexisting in the Democratic Party, which includes people like Tom Metzger, who is an avowed Klansman. So I want to say enough of the capitalist parties. It's time for a workers' party. And we need a workers' government that can end this issue for once and for all. And I don't think this present Board of Supervisors are the people who are likely to do it. Thank you.
The next speaker is Don Padgett.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman, Supervisors. I am a veteran of 14 and a half years of our armed forces. And 6 years ago, I had a head injury. Presently, I'm an epileptic, and I have a plate in my head. On September the 2nd, I was returning from the VA hospital on the 38 Geary bus, and right after school had started, approximately the 2nd or the 3rd of September of last month, I was sitting in the back of the bus minding my own business, and a whole bunch of kids from Lincoln High School got on. Blacks, whites, Chicanos, they were youths and they were punks. Because I was sitting there, I was thrown vectitudes that I didn't want, I didn't like, but I tried to ignore it, and then the music started going louder, the smoking, and I tried to get the attention of the driver, and I tried to get up to the driver, and all of a sudden a Caucasian man of 6'2 threw his leg up in the air, and if I hadn't have grabbed to a seat, I would have landed on my head and it probably would have killed me. I did manage to get up to the bus driver. I asked him to get help, and he said, "That's all right. The guys are getting off." They got off, and 4 blocks away, I got off. I was angry. I got home. I was upset. I got a cab the rest of the way, and I called the mayor's office. I spoke with one of the secretaries. She diverted me to President of the Supervisors, John Molinari, and he listened to me for 15 to 20 minutes. He took the entire problem that happened, and he said he would take care of it. Because just prior to me calling the mayor, I tried to get a hold of Muni to tell him what happened. And all I got was, "You'll have to call tomorrow because they're in a meeting." And I was angry. And I think it's about time, no matter what race, creed, or color we are, that we as human beings, no matter what our sexual preference is, we are here, and we need help. Thank you.
Ed Ulrich. And following Ed Ulrich will be Randall Schell, so if you can please come up to the front and be available when your turn comes.
Okay, I've been verbally assaulted a lot, 10 or 15 times. A car tried to run over me, and as they drove by, they yelled anti-gay remarks. I was looking in a store window, and somebody tried to smash my head in with a pipe wrench. And about 2 months ago, I climbed on a bus, and some teenagers were in the back talking about women in a very negative way. And as I walked down the aisle, they switched over to anti-gay remarks. And I looked at the person who was saying it, and he was looking right at me. And as I got off the bus stop, I waited for the bus to pull away, and I gave him the finger. And they pulled the cord, the bus stopped and let him off. And as I started running, I looked back and they were chasing me. And I looked back a second time, and one had pulled out about a 10-inch ice pick, and the other two friends pulled out 2 8-inch knife blades, and they started catching up and surrounding me. And just at that time, I flew into the Keto's bar and told them what happened, and some women went out and chased these guys away. This was 7 o'clock at night on a Sunday night on 17th and Mission Street. And now I carry a whistle and mace, and I'm thinking about taking a self-defense course of some kind. Thank you.
At this point, I'm very emotional, and I ask your understanding for that. I came in here today to talk about the assault on myself and my roommate who could not be here today. It seems almost repetitive to tell you about my assault in light of all the horrible things that have been told today. I was walking on Broadway in Polk at the end of July, and my attacker was a white male who called me a punk fag and smashed my head against a lamppost. I had 5 stitches as a result of it, but luckily I'm here to talk about it today to those who are interested. There have been a couple of references today in regard to the 22-year-old male who was killed in Haight Street. He lived with me. That's why he can't be here today. It's very difficult for me to stand here and talk to you and tell you about what's happening to me and my brothers and sisters. During the weekend of Tommy's murder, the city was absolutely insane. Polk Street, Castro Streets were filled with Christian fundamentalists absolutely inviting the thugs to follow them. The thugs are their right hand. I don't know who issues permits for these people to be on the street, to carry out their very special kind of silent violence against us, but somebody's doing it. Someone's got to take responsibility. And we also hear that in 1981 they're going to be coming back, causing violence, opening up the pathway for the thugs to follow them again. Well, who's going to take the responsibility now to try to stop it? I'm not saying that an individual from a fundamentalist group is responsible for killing Tommy. I'm not saying that any one of those people is responsible for killing me, or I'm sorry, for hurting me. But collectively, there is responsibility.
The next speaker is Jim Sigrell, followed by Mimi Goodwin.
Thank you. I've been assaulted about 3 times in the last 6 months. It's been by all different minority groups, even, you know, young white kids, and it's happening all over the city, not in just one district. I've been assaulted over by Buen Vista Park on Haight Street. The most violent attack occurred on the night of July 4th. I was assaulted by 5 men. They came up to me and they were friendly at first, asked me what time it was. While I reached down to look at my watch, I was hit on the head with a club. They broke my jaw in 3 places, knocked out a few of my teeth, and I have to have some more dental work done. I had to have my jaw wired shut for 8 weeks. I was not able to talk or eat. I found a complete lack of interest by the police. I was rushed to the hospital at San Francisco General. I tried to speak with a policeman immediately there, and he wouldn't take a report. He said he was busy. He would get back to me in an hour. I was never, nobody ever came back to talk to me again. About 5 hours later, I was discharged from the hospital. This was 5 o'clock in the morning by this time. On the way home, my lover and I came across the same men that had assaulted me. They were still at the corner of 16th and Bryant. We went to the Southeast Police Station down at 3rd and 20th Street, and we went and reported this to the police. They asked me if I was 100% sure it was the same people. I said, I know for a fact the one guy that hit me was definitely there. They said, well, we don't think you will go to court and press charges. We don't want to waste our time if you will not go and press charges. So then I said, well, look, these people are definitely there. They're out there. They're going to hurt more people. He said, you drive back to the scene and then take a second look. Then if you come back here and you are definitely, definitely sure it's the same people, we will go out and look. Needless to say, I went home and forgot about the matter. Well, I haven't completely forgotten about it. I have taken a MACE course, and I have gotten some protection. Now when I go out at night, I will never ride a bus again at night by myself. And I do have protection, and this is one faggot that is, when he's attacked, he's going to fight back, and maybe they'll think twice about attacking us again.
Mimi Goodwin. Right now I'm feeling shaky and outraged, and I'm also one lesbian who is going to fight back. I used to sit around with friends of mine, and we used to talk about when. It's never when anymore, it's if. And that scares the hell out of me. And what I want to talk about is, I'm real aware that in every single group of lesbians that I am in every group of women I am in every group of lesbians and gay men that I ever am in, whether it's political work, whether we're at a potluck, no matter where we are, more than one of us has been attacked. And when I'm with women, someone has been raped. And I think it's real important to realize that all the horrendous stories that are being put out today are just a very minute sample of what's going on. Then I want to talk about this week. Every day that I've gone anywhere on the street, I've been verbally harassed, and I've started running twice. It's like I don't know when the verbal harassment is going to turn to violence. And my whistle, the mace, nothing is enough. And I hope that this is a beginning. These hearings are a beginning, and there's no easy answers, and it's going to take a lot of work to stop this violence, and I really want to support what's been said about the third world communities, and I think it's real important that the gay community stops the myths that's Latino youths that are attacking us. Thank you.
And that about wraps it up on The Gay Life this morning. You've heard excerpts from the hearings of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors on violence against lesbians and gay men. Those hearings were held on October 9th. We've already presented an hour of that in a previous show, and next week we'll be presenting another hour of excerpts from that testimony because we feel, and because you feel, and we've spoken to you about it, it is one of the most pressing problems facing the gay and lesbian communities of San Francisco. I'm Randy Alford, and I produce The Gay Life. I also write a column on Live for The Sentinel, which is available in gay neighborhoods throughout San Francisco. The Gay Life would like to hear from you, so write us if you have any comments, criticisms, or suggestions. Our address is The Gay Life, KSAN, 345 Sansom Street, San Francisco, California, 94104. Once more, that's The Gay Life, KSAN, 345 Sansom Street, San Francisco, 94104. If you're listening on Saturday morning, this show will be repeated Sunday night at midnight. So tell a friend to start the week with The Gay Life on KSAN.